Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy to be here on this Monday, this marvelous, marvelous Market Monday. If you've been following our show, you know that every day is a different theme. And so we're starting the week out with Market Monday, where we look at different markets, looking at ways to integrate into different markets or even highlight misconceptions that may exist in some of these markets. Our job and our goal on this radio show is to make sure that your business is healthier. I mean, we do that by providing information, number one, and having dialogue or discussion around aspects that may essentially connect to your business directly. We also do it by allowing you to join into the conversation. If anyone out there wants to join into the conversation today, our call-in number is 859-291-2255. Once again, that number is 859-291-2255. If you want to send us a message, that is info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. And so as the only business doctor of the only business hospital in the world, my job is to make sure that your businesses are healthy. And when we look at business, we focus mainly on small business, and small business is categorized from $50 million and under or 500 employees or less. And so that includes anyone from micro or boutique businesses to startup founders, mom and pop shops, solopreneurs, serial entrepreneurs. Our job is to make sure that you all understand how to look at your work, how to look at the industries that you're engaged in, how to go about doing what it is that you do better. And in doing that, we call that treatment. Today's guest is someone that I'm really excited to bring to you all today. His name is Chris Taylor Coverall. We're going to bring him in momentarily to talk about the work that he does and the industry that he's in. And then, learning a little bit about what it is that he brings to the table and their specialty of work, and seeing how that translates into the work that you all do. Over the weekend, there was a lot going on and some things that I was looking at in our industry. You know, the market itself is starting to balance itself at a level. I know that people are nervous as it relates to a recession. And just by definition, a recession is two quarters where the GDP goes in reverse or doesn't perform up to standard, where you've gone negative in two consecutive quarters. And so therefore, by definition, we're in a recession. But it may not feel that way to many people because, you know, people are still buying things. We're shopping. We're traveling. You still see signs out here that says help wanted, which is always a good sign. And so when you think about your business, you might think that, well, right now, you know, we could be doing a little bit better, or when will this time actually turn? And what I would say to you is that make sure that you are prepared based on looking at the signals that are being given to us. When I say the signals, most of us look at symptoms, not signals. And you might say, hey, doc, what are you talking about? Well, a signal is an indicator that lets you know that something's coming. A lot of times symptoms are the response to something that's already happened. And what I'm recommending and offering to you is that we want you to pay attention to things that are on its way. So just as a tip, if you will, or a recommendation of a sort, is that when you look at the market, whatever market you're in, look at how it fits inside of the industry. Look at some of the trends that are taking place, and then look at what has happened historically to start creating signals that you can now pay attention to. So for an example, if fuel prices are up now, what does that mean? That eventually they will bottom out and they'll be lower later. And if you have a business, let's say you're in logistics, that may mean something to you. And so now you should be planning while you're looking to sustain now, you should be planning for what does that look like ahead? How do we get ourselves in position to take advantage of some of these changes that may come down the pike? So therefore, you can then earn the type of revenue, operate with the appropriate efficiency, or really at the end, realize the types of net profits that you need in order to reinvest in your business or act as a surplus for activities that you've done before, but that now you can receive the reward for at this time. So make sure that you're paying attention to your signals and not your symptoms. But without further ado, I want to bring in today's guest. This is Chris Taylor. He is the general manager and regional director of the Cincinnati region for the company Coverall. Chris Taylor, thanks so much for joining the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. And, you know, one thing about you, and I'm excited for my listeners to hear, is that you take a very pragmatic stance to business. And so I'm going to have a lot of fun looking at just some of the more practical applications that you tend to speak with when it comes to business. But before we start with that, kind of walk our audience through what it is that you do in the industry and the business that you're in.
Sure. Well, our company is a sales and marketing organization with somewhere around 4,500 to 5,000 franchise owners nationwide. We service about 90 markets. And here in Cincinnati, we have about 105, 110 local franchise owners, and we're in the commercial janitorial space. So every business out there, we have some type of solution for, as far as having their business be not only more aesthetically pleasing, but also safer for their employees and for their consumers.
Well, we know that the type of work is important. It's always been important. You talk about the cleanliness of a business, and I'm only going to start there. I know there's more facets, and I'm going to talk about those facets. But let's start with just the product of cleaning, or the product of sanitation, or the product of just making sure that a business is pleasing or aesthetically as pleasing as it can be. We know that that's been something that's always been important, but kind of give us a sense of what's happened since the pandemic. What happened during the pandemic and then obviously post-pandemic?
Well, as everyone knows, you know, pre-pandemic, it was something to the effect, as far as businesses were concerned, of, you know, what can I afford? What is my clientele expecting from a cleanliness or aesthetic standpoint? And if we can marry, you know, some additional health applications with that, that's great. If not, that's fine too. That was pre-pandemic. However, when the pandemic happened, then it was, oh my goodness, how do we not only have our building look good, but how can we have it be safer for our employees and anyone who may visit? And what does that look like? There's a number of different spokes to that wheel. As everybody knows, it was, you know, almost impossible to get, you know, spray bottles, disinfectants, things that would make places safer to be in, right? Luckily for us, we were way ahead of that curve, and our leadership really for about 10 years had been using all hospital-grade disinfectants. We knew kind of where the market was going. Eventually, it was going to be really needed. We had also taken a look at all of the billions of dollars lost every year by businesses because of lost production from employee sickness, clientele sickness, and people just simply being out because facilities weren't maintained properly. So thankfully, we didn't have to go searching for solutions. We had been very, very futuristic in our approach to how do we get to that point before we need it. So that's kind of where we've been, and it's good to be part of an organization like that.
Well, you know, it's important that you talk about these things. I worked with a host of manufacturing plants in Brazil at one time, and this was post-pandemic, just slightly after, I guess, the announcement that things had kind of dovetailed off. And I remember being brought in to really discuss things such as supply chain and their workforce, hiring strategy and internal controls. Partly, I would say, on top of that was leadership. However, a lot of our conversation and a lot of work we did actually spun right into realms of disinfectant, or how to make our environment safer, or how do we keep up with the demand that's needed in this area. And I found that to be unique, that just even in a location such as South America, that topic had morphed to the front or the top of the agenda, and it wasn't an afterthought. And so what it made me think about even then is I remember offices that wasn't something that you brought up as a need. It was, well, you know, it was a requirement. You kind of had a company and you brought them in and, you know, they did the job. And if they did, you fired them, you brought someone else in. But now I see it being on the top of agendas for companies, especially with everyone returning back to work. What does that look like for you in your space? Have you seen an uptick and how people view this market and how they view the space, or is it about the same based on your perceptions?
No, there's definitely been an uptick. You know, any business wants to protect their resources, and the most valuable resource and where they spend the most money is really in their people. And if you have people out unable to work, sick, right, and tragically, you know, with this latest pandemic, you know, loss of life, that really affects your ability to deliver on whatever you promised your customer base in whatever field that is. So the importance has definitely been driven up, and the outlook has been, you know, how do we get there? How do we change this? What kind of resources and dollars do we need to put in place to make sure that we're doing everything possible to mitigate our risk? And in business, really, that's what it comes down to, right? You know, everybody wants to take care of people, but the vast majority of business, they really want to mitigate the risk, and they want to make sure that they're not putting unnecessary resources at risk in the future. The only way to do that is to protect those things today.
Well, absolutely. And so your job helps them understand that. And I would venture to say, but I'd much rather have it in your words, that you all are doing that in a much more, I would say, consultative nature, where it's not about just bids and quotes all the time, but it's making them understand their business just a little bit differently, even something as simple as what cleans versus what protects. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely. And a lot have, probably 97%+ of this space is operated by mom and pops, not large conglomerate companies. Because of that, you know, the mom and pops oftentimes just don't know really what the risk is based on certain cleaners that they may use that don't have disinfecting properties. That in return is a snowball effect and puts those businesses that they're servicing at risk, as well as their customers and their resources. A lot of businesses have changed over and said, wait a minute, we want to make sure that there's an oversight provided and a maximum support of whoever's servicing our building from someone different than them, so that when we need the risk to be eliminated as much as possible, and you never get rid of all of it, but when we need that to be eliminated as much as possible, who is going to make sure that the right disinfectant's being used, that the right thing is taking place, that there's not cross-contamination, that the processes are going to achieve what we need them to achieve. And because of that consultative nature that you mentioned, we have really seen a huge growth and benefit, in which really helps our franchise owners, right? I mean, we have 106, 110 small business owners that have really benefited from the opportunity that has presented itself based on the support that we can provide them.
I bet that's the case, and I want to transition a little bit, because you mentioned, you know, the 106 to 110 some odd, you know, independent contractors. Talk a little bit about their reality, because you're talking these business owners, and I imagine their skill sets, their experience, their business acumen ranges probably significantly from individuals that, you know, have owned, you know, successful businesses in the past and decided they wanted to transition into a different industry, to people that's never owned a business before. Give us a sense of, you know, what that looks like and how you guys navigate that world for your company.
Sure. Yeah, every franchise owner is uniquely different, and everyone has a different definition of what success is. You know, we have franchise owners that range from, you know, a few thousand dollars a month in business that they do, and franchise owners that are doing, you know, 90 plus thousand dollars a month in business. Everyone's definition is different when it comes to what will make you successful. Not everyone wants to achieve at the same level monetarily, and that's okay, right? I mean, you need every aspect of that. Every aspect and every difference is part of that puzzle that fits together and allows us to service these franchise owners' customers, and provide them the support that they need. every franchise owner comes to us with a different level of experience. Some have no business experience, and that's okay, because we want to provide the support and we want to provide what they need from a business standpoint, from a here's the process and actually what we do, and then here's your ongoing support and training as you continue to grow and develop as a business owner. So it doesn't matter where you're coming from. It's really a plug and play, and if you follow the system, it's been proven over the last 40 years to be really good.
Well, you know what? I want to talk about, you know, when you use the term support. You know, support looks different to everyone, and one thing that I've been harping on the show here, and for my consistent listeners, I think you'll point to it, is that I'm always asking and recommending for you to have the right experts in your corner to make sure that you're not doing all the heavy lifting alone, and that you know where your help should come from. But in this instance, we're doing the flip side, where you are the actual resource that I'm asking the business owners to lean on. So when you say support, what does that look like for your franchise owners?
Well, it's, you know, anytime that you own a franchise, and everybody's been into, you know, a local fast food restaurant or something of that nature, and you look on the wall and there's a plaque there and it says, you know, this whatever it might be, XYZ fast food joint is owned and operated independently by JJ's Restaurants or ABC Restaurants LLC or whatever it may be. This is very, very much the same in that we want to provide a level of support where if our franchise owners have questions, we can let them know what has worked good for other franchise owners in the past. We can make recommendations, and we can help try to provide options for solutions. At the end of the day, it is completely up to them. They have to make the best business decision that they can possibly make, because we don't decide what our franchise owners do for their customers. We provide a roadmap, we provide support, and we provide resources. But they have to actually make the decision, follow through with that decision, and then maintain their customer base.
So when you're talking about building it, you're also leaning on a model that's been tried and true, that Coverall has established in the industry, and essentially I would venture to say, and I need your correction on this, but venture to say that you perfected at some realm as it relates to your ability to duplicate this process in different regions around the nation. How does that play with the franchise owners? Is it a scenario where it's widely accepted and it's, you know, something that they embrace and it's rinse and repeat, or is it met with struggle and opposition and challenge at times?
You know, I would say, you know, that we have some of the best franchise owners, you know, in any business. Of course, I work with these franchise owners every day, and we provide support to them every day, so I'm probably a little biased, and that's okay. But I would also say that, you know, really any struggle or any, you know, misconception about, you know, running your own business or what to do when you actually are out there and you're responsible for the quality of service you're providing, it's... all of that has been covered in a comprehensive training. That training is ongoing, so it doesn't just stop. We're always there to help and provide that support to the franchise owner when they come up and against a situation that they haven't faced before, and they might not have an answer for it. We're able to help kind of make recommendations and give them a certain set of circumstances that may improve their ability to make a great decision based on what they're presented with. Every person, and of course every franchise owner, they have the option to do what they want, right? It's their business. They paid for it, and we're not going to run their business for them. And listen, some people are much better running a business than others. That's okay. There's still place in the space for small, medium, and large franchise owners.
You know, and that just mimics how the rest of this business world looks, is that you created, you know, Coverall's created a universe in the industry that allows people to participate in a way that is superior to their own participation. I know when you talk about the franchise world, and I know what we're talking about now is multi-layered, because we're dealing with the products and services, one, as a certain market, but then two, you're dealing with small business ownership, and then three, which is even unique to itself, is franchising. And so those three aspects or elements of business, if you will, are very different. But in this case, for your operation, is that you've got franchise owners that now have a system, they have a support, and then they have a template to help them go out and be successful. Whereas if they didn't have those, they would have to understand, how do we go out here and generate revenue or find leads and clients, or how do I even do my job better? Because I would imagine you guys have a bank or a library, if you will, of just information, resources that says these are best practices. These are things that others have done that's made them successful and like scenarios. When you look at that, I mean, how invaluable is that in your opinion to just trying to create the same type of entity on their own? If you can walk us through what that looks like in your realm.
Well, it's tremendously valuable. You know, anytime that someone has spent a long period of time, in this case, you know, about 40 years developing this process, and a lot has changed since then, you know, from 40 years ago to today. And it is a constantly evolving world, regardless of what space you're in. Cars aren't the same as they were 40 years ago, right? Neither is this industry. But there's a few things that are tried and true that you don't have to try to figure out and bump your head on. You know, we know that wooden wheels just aren't the way to go. We're better off putting rubber around a steel or aluminum rim, right? We figured that out. So what we provide is all of those things that we figured out over that period of decades, that now you do not have to as a franchise owner, right? There's fast food restaurants that have been out there for a long time. You don't have to figure out how long to cook the burger. You know, it's 18 seconds on this side and 17 seconds on this side, and then it's done. Someone else mm-hmm. has figured that out for you. And that's the advantage, really, of franchising. And that's why it's so successful along so many different industries.
Fully agreed. I think when you take that template, and this is, you know, coming from a person that's created all the companies that I have, there's times I wish there was a playbook for the work that I've done. And there wasn't. Many of the playbooks that I prescribe to now were created, and those come with a lot of heartache and pain, lost investment, because there's so much that you don't know, even when you know. You know, I would take your same response and say, well, there's a lot of things that you knew about the industry. Being with Cobra, how long now?
14 years, and I had a building services business for almost 10 years prior to that. So 24 years in this space, you learn a lot.
Right, you learn a lot in those 24 years, but I would also venture to say that you still run into things from time to time that make you scratch your head and say, well, heck, I could not have predicted this scenario, or when did this arise, and now we have to make an adjustment. That reality is the same for all business owners and all industries at all levels. So therefore, it becomes really important to knock out the knowns. And a lot of the work that you all do is to help franchise owners see those knowns ahead of time and then say, be prepared for everything on this spectrum. And so that might be, let's call it 10 things, but there might only be two things that neither one of you are ready for, but being ready for two, you know, in a way that's going to surprise you, is much better than having to be ready for 12 surprises. Am I right in that?
Absolutely. And you know, fortunately in business, there's a number of things that have to be considered that are the same across industry after industry. It just doesn't matter, right? There's a legal side of things that have to be considered. There is a monetary side of things. What's it going to take us to do what we're trying to accomplish? What can we charge for what we're trying to accomplish? What's left over at the end of that? Is the risk reward, does that pan out? There's a number of different questions, and as me and you have had, you know, over the years, no matter what the business is, all of those questions have to be asked. And if you don't have the expertise in the industry, well, then you have to go find the resources. And it's so important to be able to have someone to go to that can say, have you considered this? Have you considered this? Have you considered this? And oftentimes with young business, and sometimes with business that's been around and very successful, a lot of things have never been considered, and it's either kept a business that's doing $1 million a year at $1 million when it could have been 10, or it's kept a business, you know, doing a couple $1,000s a month when it could be doing $50,000 a month, right? I mean, because you don't know what you don't know. And it's so important to have resources around you that will allow you to take a look at things from a totally different perspective. Because when your line of sight changes, so does how you view something, regardless of what it is.
Well, I think that's important when you talk about the line of sight. I speak about perspective frequently, and that has everything to do with your position. Where are you standing? That gives you your vantage point. When you talk about a business that in theory could be doing 2, 5, or 10x, in some cases it could be the minimization of expenses or other outgoes that maybe they aren't making more, but they're keeping more. Or maybe they aren't making more, but they're working in better efficiencies, which now they can then put back into their, you know, their staff and team members, to where you've got more job satisfaction, or you're getting, you know, some philanthropic or corporate social responsibilities done. Point is, all of those are different vantage points, and knowing what you're doing, have the right team, having the right support leads into that. Talk to us a little bit about just some of the struggles of the industry. And when I say the industry, I'm talking more so on your product and service side. Things that you've seen, whether it's through the competition, obviously we're not naming names, but just things that business owners should be aware of and that maybe they take for granted, but might affect their business in a very, you know, imperative way.
Well, I'll tell you, the number one struggle, as with any business that's trying to grow, is human resources. It is so difficult in this current day and time, since the pandemic, to hire staff really that are high quality. It's, you know, there was a time when, well, if you paid well, you could generally find someone to do a pretty decent job for you. That has become increasingly more difficult for whatever reason. And everybody is experiencing it, right? It's not just us. It's, you know, I drove by I won't mention the fast food restaurant, but, you know, they're starting crew members at $18 an hour. And I just remember thinking to myself, wow, I can remember when it was $8 an hour 3 years ago. Minimum. Mm-hmm. 3 years, we are 36 months later, and it's $18 an hour. But I'm sure everybody has, you know, and that gets passed along to the consumer. So as the cost for human resources goes up, so does the cost for those goods. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole economics of all of that, but that is a very real thing. And that's probably the biggest struggle that I see small business owners today really have, is the ability to grow their business, not because they can't find a customer base or because they don't have opportunity, but because they struggle to find the human resources and the human capital to actually get the work done.
Well, we talk about that daily. So once again, audience, you know, there's another reality that your human capital is the one of the top reasons of why your business would succeed or fail. I mean, we literally, Chris Taylor, talk about this ad nauseum, how that is number one, having the right people doing the right stuff. Then it's undercapitalization, just essentially meaning you don't have enough money. And I know that some people say, well, do you ever have enough money? Well, if you're prudent as it relates to the budget, your assumptions, then you can have an adequate amount of financial resources to at least get the job started or emerge into a new market or reinvest into yourself that allows you to remain a significant player amongst your peer group. But oftentimes the human capital breaks down or the actual influx of cash breaks them down. And then ultimately companies die or don't succeed at the levels in which they should. I want to pause there for a moment for a station break. We have to have an identification. And today's segment of Market Mondays is brought to you by Bazemore Beard Oil. Bazemore Beard Oil is the premier beard oil for any man looking to build a nice, growing, thick beard. Smells better, groomed better, grows better. Bazemore Beard Oil is the product for you. There's three fragrances. One is Nova, one is Flight, one is Waves. You can find them on BazemoreProducts.com. Once again, that's Bazemore Beard Oil at BazemoreProducts.com. B-A-Z-E-M-O-R-E, BazemoreProducts.com. So let's go back to that and talking about human capital. One thing that, you know, I find to be a baseline, and you mentioned the baseline, regardless of the business you're in, there's certain fundamentals that carry over from space to space, and that's a lot of the times how I'm able to do work as a general practitioner, is that there are usual occurrences that I can determine in a business to say this business is healthy in comparison to this one. And you started by saying the human capital, and we know that, especially from, you know, being a person that's interested in sports, is that, you know, your coaching can be one thing, but the players still have to play. And if the players are not playing, then the coach isn't as good as the coach would like to think that the coach is, because the players have to carry out the agenda. Talk to us a little bit about how much time you spend actually on the human capital side as opposed to the product service side. Just give us a sense of what that's like in your world and within your space.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we don't actually provide any assistance for our franchise owners, as it's their business to find their own human capital. So we don't provide assistance for that. Obviously, there's, you know, different legal aspects to that, and we don't want to get involved in that. However, I do know from over 10 years of my own business in the building services space, and almost 5 years as an independent insurance agent, about 20 agents that work for me, that human capital is everything. It is a very difficult thing to navigate when there's two ways to do it, really. One is you have enough business that isn't really marginally profitable. You might only be getting a 3 or 4 or 5% margin out of it, which is pretty low in when you're running a small business, but it allows you the resources to have better human capital. Because you have resources to have better human capital, then when you do generate the business that has a much higher margin attached to it, you have the people in place to actually accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. So there's some of those things where I'm going to take this piece of business that's not hugely beneficial today, but it allows me to have the assets in place to do something that's hugely beneficial tomorrow. And that's the foresight and the future thinking, the downward thinking of what do I need to get to where I want to go. The other aspect of it is I have limited resources as far as human capital goes, so I need to make sure that the business that I'm doing provides the margin that I want. I have conflict all the time with franchise owners that are looking at different accounts and ways that they might want to take their business. My question is always, it's not the revenue difference. What do you keep at the end of the day? What does your EBITDA look like? What is your profitability? I don't want to do $1 million worth of whatever it is and I'll put $40,000 in my pocket, right? That doesn't make any sense to me. I would rather do $100,000 of whatever it is in revenue and keep $35,000 in my pocket.
I think what you're bringing in there is the understanding of business. And when we say the understanding of business, there's a lot of times you'll hear individuals say, well, I want to make more money. But making more money is good in one instance, and it may be terrible in another instance. Right, so that same example that you're giving, let's say you're a $200,000 business and you'd like to make $300,000. Well, if it costs you double to make that same amount, then that's not better. But yeah, that's also understanding your operation, the costs that are associated with it, what to do and how to do. That might not be the best reality. And so helping business owners understand their numbers, understanding their business model is crucial. It's something that we talk about regularly with our patients. It's also something we speak about on Financial Fridays. But it also looks like in your industry, you have to deal with that. And actually, I'd like to talk about that for a moment. Speak about when a new franchise owner comes in, they have options and choices on what type of franchise they want. Do you see that sometimes they're making their decision based on the grandeur idea of how much money they can make? Or do you think that they come in with a sober mind and they're doing it based on what they believe they can handle at the time?
You know, it's been my experience that everyone comes in with a different mindset. But by and large, entrepreneurs think, man, if my business is generating X number of dollars, that's a successful business. So I really have to try to slow that down in an effort to provide them the support that they need and say, wait a minute, just because your business is generating X doesn't mean that it's successful. There's a lot of businesses that have generated, you know, billions of dollars that were not successful. I'll give you a case in point, right? Kmart. Kmart was generating billions of dollars in revenue, but ultimately went out of business. And we can go right on down the line and look at business after business. I would rather have, as far as that goes, a lemonade stand that did $200 in lemonade sales and I got to keep $150, as opposed to Kmart that was generating, you know, $30 billion a year in sales and was costing me, you know, a net upside down of about $2 billion. You're not going to stay in business long doing that, right? So
right.
Everyone has a different aspect, a different way to look at that, but it's up to us to kind of put some reality goggles on with the franchise owner and say, okay, where are you? Where do you want to get to, and what's the best way for you with your resources to get there? And that looks different for everybody.
Well, I think understanding how different that is for everyone is vital. You know, I get a lot of questions about what we're going to provide a business when we come in and provide treatment. And I tell our patients that my work is reactive. I have no idea what your results are going to be and, in many cases, what I'm going to do for your treatment. And it sounds as if, okay, well, doc, do you know what you're doing? And the answer is yes. But what I do is I have to run tests first. And those tests will determine what I'm going to do next. The metrics that I extract from those tests tell me what it is that I'm going to do and how I'm going to execute. Well, the reason why I'm saying that, it's no different than the body. You know, you've had a headache before, and for you it might be Tylenol, and for someone else it might be Aleve. You say, well, why are the medications so different? Well, they're indicated for the same pain relief, but your body, the pharmacokinetics of it, changes the indication of the medication. And I think that the example holds true here, even in your industry, which is, yes, we have products. Yes, we have franchises, but each individual changes how these products and services are deployed and how much these franchises grow. Is that correct in your viewpoint based on your experiences?
Absolutely, and that goes back to what we originally talked about at the beginning, was everyone has a different outlook or a different perspective on what success is. Listen, not everybody wants to have a small business that's going to generate $20,000, $30,000, $90,000 a month. They don't want the headaches of that. That's a lot going on. It's a lot of time. We have small business owners I have a small business owner that's been around for about 25 years and serviced all of his own accounts and does about $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 in business, somewhere around there every month, and keeps all his own money. He knows what happens in his accounts. He's had really great success over that period of time, and that's how he runs his business. I have another business owner that probably has 30 employees, and that's how he runs his business. So they're both very successful. However, they both have very different outlooks, and they both need very different resources and recommendations on what's the best way for them to take that step.
Well, in that case, you know, you mentioned the headaches. You know, bigger doesn't always denote better. And I got into an argument with one of my very best friends the other day about the word evolution. I mean, we invested 2 hours and 26 minutes into the argument of evolution. And one of the reasons why it was so captivating to me is because so many perspectives came out of it that I know that I not only can use it in my life, but I can use it with my treatments and my patients. But as I condense that argument is that we think because things are different or that something changes that it might be better. And that's not always the case. Now, better also is subjective as well. You know, better in what way? What are the categories of better? And I think what you're highlighting is so important for all business owners to understand is that when you say bigger, bigger comes with other stuff, junk, and things. Is that, okay, well, I've got 30 employees. Well, now that's 30 people you now have to manage. And you have to have other things in place in order to manage them. So maybe you don't have the right internal systems and tools in place, or maybe you have to invest at a higher level, or maybe you need a larger pipeline for where you get your employees, because when one leaves, you need to replace them. And if not, then how do your accounts get serviced? How much coaching or how much assistance or support do you guys have to provide to the franchise owners to understand these realities? Or is it more a scenario where, since they're business owners, they need to kind of learn these lessons on their own? What does that look like?
You know, I think it's both. The coaching and the support is really nonstop. There is, you know, an evolution of business, and you can only do so much work yourself. That's just the reality of it. And these franchise owners are franchise owners, although they're really outstanding. By and large, they're really outstanding and hardworking and driven individuals. But everyone knows different things, and not everybody knows everything, me included. But the thing that we try to drive home is you don't have to figure this out on your own. It doesn't. If I don't know, someone in my office may. If we don't know, we've never encountered it in my 24 years of being in this business, someone in Cleveland may have, or in San Diego, or on the East Coast somewhere. We have the resources. Someone has been down this road before, and that's why I think that it's so vital for someone to have a resource that they can use. And me and you talk about this all the time. Listen, if I don't have the answer, I can touch somebody who does. And that's the value, I think, that the business hospital brings to clientele. Even if you've never been in that space, your network of resources is such that you can touch almost anyone to figure out what needs to be done. So this small business owner, this entrepreneur, this person that needs help and guidance, does not have to go and bump their head, cost themselves 10 times, you know, what it would cost them if they just simply asked the right person.
Well, in that instance, once again, we're talking about resources and support. So this is a reoccurring theme amongst business owners is where do you gain your information? Where do you gain your help for the aspects and the elements that you don't know? And is there a consistent, what I would call behavior toward that interaction? Whereas I know in my position and my experiences, a lot of times when I see a patient, I'm seeing them when things have gotten really bad. They really need a miracle or a Hail Mary or the proverbial Hail Mary to get them out of whatever ailment that they're suffering from. But if you had a continuous relationship with seeking assistance, talking about your business, working with those that have expertise in areas that you don't, then you stave off the stage four cancer, if you will, from a business standpoint, because you're dealing with preventative health to make sure that you're fine. Let's talk about that a little bit with some of these, and I'm switching back to the products and services, this part of the market, is how do you view these businesses now that we know we've gone, you know, post-pandemic? They're looking at their businesses now as an extension of not just their business, but also ensuring the health and the safety of others. With this new mentality, do you think that this industry now is going to be on an upswing as it relates to more entrants, more competition, or do you believe that it's still going to be heavily dominated by the players that it was before? It's just that they'll gain more loyalty from their past clients. What do you predict?
I would say, like anything that kind of becomes the next pit stop, right, or the next, whatever the latest, greatest as seen on TV is, there'll be people that try to jump into the space. I don't think, it's not been my experience that the space jumpers, as I like to call them, the industry jumpers, they don't last very long. Because they're going to be on to the next, whatever they feel like the quick buck is. But the people that have been around for a long time, that have shown the ability to grow and adapt with whatever the current market, the current needs are of the space, they're going to be around, they're going to grow and benefit. We've experienced tremendous growth over the last 2 years, 2.5 years. And we'll continue to do that, which the best part about that is our franchise owners have been able to grow and really experience that growth. And it's not just monetarily rewarding, but it also is rewarding on a personal level when you can see someone really grow a business and achieve at a level that they otherwise may not be able to, and you've been able to be a part of that. It affects them, it affects their family, it affects their children, and that's really a neat thing for me.
Well, I'm sure. You know, I have the same reality when it comes to seeing a business that is unhealthy, and we help them understand what true health looks like. Not so much, hey, doc, you know, how much more money are you going to make me if I hire you, but more so with them understanding all of the different, I would say, elements to their business, especially in instances when they didn't even know that there was an element. So now you've created that awareness, then you've helped build a skill set that maybe they don't need today, but eventually they will. And you're able to watch that with franchise owners as they come in for the first time, and before they purchase their first portion of that franchise, and maybe they came in with very limited knowledge, but then you see them grow that franchise over time, and maybe they're servicing some of the larger entities within your region, and you're saying, I remember when that person didn't have much at all. Those are always the pleasures of watching business owners grow. And just as much as we have those pleasures, what are some of the faults or the barriers or the obstacles that you wish some of your franchise owners didn't have to go through that either ultimately caused them to fail or had them struggle a little bit more than probably they should have? Are there any examples of that?
There are. I would say that it's the same across business, and I'll share this, and then I'll tell a quick story to kind of give you an understanding of what I'm talking about. Everyone always asks the simple question, what causes a franchise owner to not be successful? And it's really very simple, because this business is not complex. It doesn't mean it's easy, but it's not terribly complex. What causes a franchise owner, really in any industry, to not be successful is they don't see their business every day. They're not part of their business every day. Well, why would you have to, I don't want to own a business to have to be a part of it every day. Well, things that you don't hear Mark Cuban say, right? Mm-hmm. Now, surely he can hire someone and pay them multiplied millions to run his business. However, he is part of his business every day. There's a reason why. Warren Buffett, surely he can hire someone and again, pay them multiplied millions, but he shows up every day to run his business. If mm-hmm. those individuals who have unlimited resources have to do that, what would make a small business owner think that they don't need to do that? And that sometimes is the misconception. I don't have to run my business every day. You absolutely do, and that's probably the biggest pitfall. Now, I'll give you a quick story. We had a customer years and years ago in a different city, and back in the late 70s, early 80s, they wanted to develop a computer, and everybody was kind of trying to get into the computer space, right? They built a computer, and it was three guys, and kind of the standard story, you know, built a computer in the garage, took it to a trade show, and, you know, at the time, had Hewlett Packard and IBM, you know, the big boys were there, right? But in order to show what their computer would do, they needed to connect it to a certain printer. The problem is there was no cable that connected their computer to the printer they needed to use. So before they could go and show what their computer could do, they had to build a cable that would connect it in order for the consumer to say, wow, that's really neat. I need one of those computers. They did this. They got to the trade show. People said, that's great. Yeah, a lot of computers do that. That's wonderful. Hey, where can I get one of those cables? So they left there and they went back home. They had so much interest in the cables, they said, wait a minute. Why are we building a computer and trying to knock off Hewlett-Packard and IBM? Why don't we make cables that every computer can use? Because they don't exist yet. They're not out there. So they started making cables. Their business doubled every 4 years for the next 25 years, and ultimately they sold that business for about $375 million. Now, that's pretty decent, right? Great success story. But here's my point. When we would go in this building, most of the time after hours, 6, 7, 8, 9 p.m., every time that we were in there, one of those three owners, founders, was there. Employees were gone. The people they had hired, and they had about 150 employees, they were all gone. They were home. They left at 5 o'clock. But one of the three founders was always there looking over their business. Now, if they have a business that they're selling for $375 million and they're splitting that amongst themselves, that's pretty decent. Most people would say, wow, that's successful. They did a great job. If that person has to look over their business, you absolutely have to look over yours. Because to date, nobody's offered me $375 million for my business.
Well, that's what it takes, right, in order to grow it. I talk to a lot of startup founders that, you know, believe that they have the next best this or that, which I'm not declaring if they do or do not. But what I always find to be the misnomer of the inspiration is that they've seen someone else do that, where, you know, this company here had an exit of X. I'm going to build something and I can do the same thing. Well, it's not so much about the concept or the idea. It has everything to do with the execution of it all. And so what you're speaking to is the execution, even of the owners, by taking a mentality of proverbial and literal ownership. Is that this is mine, so because it's mine, I have to be engaged in it, I have to be connected to it, and I have to interact inside of it in such a way to where I'm forcing the progression, and it's hard to separate myself from the entity, especially on the up curve. Whereas I'm in agreement with you, is I've seen even, I would call efforts, that's been pushed in, well, since efficiency is the key, efficiency means you don't have to be there. I'll give you a great example of this. We talk about stories. Is I hold a lot of meetings, on average about 6 or 7 a day, and it always surprises me who's successful in their business. And when we say successful, by all the traditional and I would say general measures of success, as opposed to those that are struggling. And you say, well, why is that? Well, I can look at the importance of our meeting and how you set the importance of the meeting to determine your overall thoughts toward not only your business, but every other attachment to the business. And so I've seen people just not prepared for their appointments, mentally not there for the appointments, or trying to delegate the appointment when you're saying, well, isn't this a major decision-making opportunity? How are you delegating that one goes in your lap? But they call that efficiency, and it's a misnomer on the reality that that's efficiency. I imagine that you see some of that in the form of delegation with maybe even franchise owners where they said they've hired someone, but maybe the person they hired is not truly equipped for the thing that they are defaulting to them, but nevertheless, they still delegate it to them. Does that happen regularly in your experience with franchise owners or with other entities in your industry?
I would, regular would probably be maybe a little bit of an overshot, but it does happen. And when it happens, what I find is when it happens with, you know, once, it happens repeatedly. You know, I always tell the story, and I tell this, really, I make this statement to every franchise owner. I don't care if it's your mom, your cousin, your best friend since kindergarten, the lady down the street that gave you a kidney, brother, church, none of that makes any difference to me. If you don't manage your business every day, you'll lose it faster than you can pay for it. And that's the only guarantee that I ever make, because the last thing that I ever want as someone that tries to provide guidance, recommendations, resources, and support to franchise owners is we're not going to sit in my office and say, man, Chris, you didn't tell me XYZ. We're never going to have that conversation. We might sit in here, and I have this one every so often. Man, I remember you told me that, but I thought I could do it different. I thought that, you know, it would be different if I did it like this. We can have that conversation, and we'll navigate. I'll try to help you through that. We'll try to get your business back on track. But it's never going to be a you didn't tell me. I just don't know another way to effectively run a business. I really, really don't.
Well, I don't think there really is one, you know, until now. You can get to certain levels to where you take a different position in the business, but that means you've replaced yourself with someone that is appropriate and adequate to where now you might be a member, you know, chairman of the board. You don't have an active daily role where you're delegated to assignment, but you and I both know is that that's when the company has become so large and there's so many people with a vested interest in the success that maybe your contributions on a day-to-day basis are not as high, even if your ownership stake is. However, when you're building a business, it's imperative that you're doing what's inherent in the name, which is building the business. That means that all of, you know, the rolling up of the sleeves, getting the proverbial hands dirty, all of that has to exist in order to push the business ultimately where it needs to go. You know, hopefully everyone here has learned a little bit from our today's guest. We've been talking with Chris Taylor, who is the regional manager, regional team leader of the Cincinnati region of Coverall. Chris, if anybody wanted to call Coverall, number one, for services, products or services for their own facilities, or they're interested in franchise opportunities, how do they get in contact with you?
They can just simply email me. They can email me at chris.taylor@coverall.com. That's chris.taylor@coverall.com. Or they can simply go on the website at coverall.com and learn more about the company.
All right, fantastic. And, you know, I personally can't think of a better way if I'm uncertain about how to create a business. And maybe, you know, it depends on where you are in the stage of life, but maybe your tolerance for risk needs to be minimized. You know, your appetite isn't as high for loss, that a franchise is a good way to go because, you know, yes, there's the investment of dollars, but that's true regardless of whatever business you build. But in this instance, at least there's a template, at least there's support, at least there's guidance, and there is a truly desired, expected end from there. Everyone, that is our show for today. I'm so happy that we had Chris Taylor join us. Hopefully you picked up a nugget or two as it relates to just working inside the business and being smart about your moves. You know, tomorrow is our Tech Tuesday. And so we'll be talking about technology and where we are in the world. Once again, I am Dr. Baker, and this is Doctor's Orders. I'm wishing you and your business all the best health. Let's do all we can to increase your business health. Enjoy the rest of the day, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.